United loses $500 million in the first quarter. Three astronauts almost didn't make it home Saturday. And Robert Crandall says U.S. airlines are now laggards in every category. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, April 23rd, 2008. Few companies are able to survive losing $537 million over a three-month period, especially if that trend continues. That's the problem now facing UAL Corp., the parent company of United Airlines. The Chicago Tribune reports United blamed the staggering loss reported Tuesday on record fuel prices. It's United's worst fiscal showing since its 2006 bankruptcy and the worst first quarter report so far among domestic airlines for 2008. The airline says it managed nearly 8% revenue growth, but suffered a $618 million jump in fuel costs. The Chicago-based airline says it'll cut its planned spending for the year by $400 million, eliminate 500 salaried and 600 more union jobs by the end of this year, and ground another 10 to 15 narrow-body planes by the end of the year. United is thought to be in serious merger talks with Continental Airlines. We're now getting some details on Saturday's atmospheric re-entry of a Soyuz space capsule carrying South Korea's first astronaut, Yi So-yun, Expedition 16 Commander Peggy Whitson, and Russian flight engineer Yuri Melnichenko back to Earth from the International Space Station. Earlier reports of a ballistic trajectory and 10-plus G forces already didn't sound good. Now, Russia's Interfax news agency quotes an unnamed Roscosmos official who says the capsule entered the atmosphere on its side, leaving the escape hatch to take the intense re-entry heat rather than the heat shield. That heat burned off a communications antenna on the way down, complicating the search for the capsule, which landed 260 miles off target in Kazakhstan. The fact that the three survived at all is credited to the stout construction of the TMA-11 capsule, which is based on late 60s Soviet technology. The Soviets designed their manned capsules to be recovered on land, in contrast to the U.S. program's ocean splashdown technique. The three spacefarers are reported to be in excellent health, despite the frightening trip home. Monday, Yi said she knew immediately something was very wrong as the capsule fell to Earth. Quote, "At first I was really scared because it looked really, really hot," unquote. And she didn't mean that in the Paris Hilton sense. In a scathing editorial in Monday's New York Times, former AMR Corp. chairman Robert Crandall laid the blame for problems facing the domestic airline industry not with the FAA or with oil-producing countries, but with current airline management. His op-ed was titled, "Charge More, Merge Less, Fly Better." Quote, "Our airlines, once world leaders, are now laggards in every category, including fleet age, service quality, and international reputation. Fewer and fewer flights are on time. Airport congestion has become a staple of late-night comedy shows. An ever higher percentage of bags are lost or sent to the wrong airports. Last-minute seats are harder and harder to find. Passenger complaints have skyrocketed. Airline service, by any standard, has become unacceptable," unquote. Crandall goes on to say mergers are not the answer because they won't lower fuel costs, but will anger employees and bring costs of their own. And he observes, quote, "The absence of competition never fosters better customer service," unquote. Crandall calls for government intervention and lower taxes on airlines. He also says airlines will only grow and survive when they face economic realities and charge higher airfares to compensate for higher costs. He argues for barriers to foreign carriers trying to enter the U.S. market and a prohibition on overseas outsourcing of maintenance. These days, Crandall is CEO of air taxi upstart PogoJet. A B-2 Spirit bomber made a successful return to flight April 15th at Missouri's Whiteman Air Force Base, following a 53-day safety pause for the aircraft following the first-ever crash of a stealth bomber February 23rd in Guam. While an accident investigation board is still ongoing, Air Force and Air Combat Command maintenance and safety experts gave the 509th Bomb Wing officials the green light to fly. The service says B-2s had logged more than 14,000 sorties, 100 combat sorties, and 75,000 flying hours without a single Class A mishap until February. Class A means loss of life or damage in excess of $1 million. Up next on ANN, the NTSB knows why that 757 lost a wing panel over Maryland. A Canadian airline says caps at Newark will put it out of business. And Aloha Airlines struggles to sell off what's left of the company. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for April 23rd, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. It now turns out that a Boeing 757, which lost a 4x5-foot composite wing panel somewhere over Maryland March 22nd, suffered failed fasteners, which were installed as part of an FAA airworthiness directive in 1991. The NTSB says that missing panel was never located, but the board has found enough evidence in surrounding components to determine what happened to U.S. Airways Flight 1250. In its initial report, the board writes, quote, "Initial examination of these components revealed that two of the three clips that secured the leading edge of the panel to the wing had failed due to metal fatigue sometime prior to the incident flight. The remaining clip failed during Flight 1250, causing the panel to separate from the aircraft," unquote. The board added that the fastener change was mandated in an FAA airworthiness directive in 1991 and was completed on this particular 757 by its then owner, Eastern Airlines. The board says it was the redesigned fasteners that failed on Flight 1250. You just know that somewhere over at American Airlines, maintenance techs are enjoying some dark humor about the FAA's recent all-knowing nitpicking about whether a nut clip is as good as a nut. Since the incident over Maryland in March, NTSB says inspections of all flying 757s have found problems with wing panel fasteners on several other aircraft, which have since been repaired and returned to service. The loss of the panel has also been downgraded from accident to incident in official jargon, since the plane's flight data recorder revealed no adverse effect on the plane's handling after that panel detached. The FAA's recent decision to impose caps on hourly operations at Newark Liberty International Airport has been criticized in some circles as a blunt instrument. The U.S. Department of Transportation's own Inspector General says the caps will be ineffective. Now a Canadian airline is telling the FAA the caps could put it out of business. The Globe and Mail reports Porter Airlines, Incorporated, based at Toronto City Center Airport, has filed a complaint with the FAA. Porter claims it bought two new Q400 turboprops at $26 million each, spent another $4 million upgrading its terminal in Toronto, and hired 70 people to support its expanded service between Toronto and Newark. Porter, which just began service in October of 2006, says the loss of two of its seven daily flights into Newark due to the new caps will impact the company, quote, "at a critical stage in its development and result in a schedule that is not economically viable," unquote. The carrier insists its turboprops are able to use runway 1129 at Newark, which is too short for jets, and fly in underutilized low-altitude turboprop airspace around Newark and New York, essentially making its operations a non-issue in the overall congestion picture. Porter's not the only Canadian airline upset with the FAA's congestion remedies. The agency has also been told by Air Canada its higher fees for peak hours at New York's JFK International Airport are unreasonable and discriminatory. The Montreal-based carrier says it has little choice but to fly at peak times to allow passengers to connect with other flights, leaving it to face, quote, "potentially significant increases in Air Canada's costs at congested airports like JFK without any corresponding benefit to the airline," unquote. Air Canada tells the Globe and Mail it's worried the FAA will introduce fee policy changes affecting all U.S. airports. Aloha Airlines, which ended passenger service last month in the face of competition from Mesa's GO subsidiary, has been struggling to move forward with the sales of its other divisions. The company's hopes of selling its air cargo division have been placed in jeopardy by assertive creditors and pilots threatening to strike. Now, the Honolulu Advertiser reports Aloha has a $2.2 million offer to sell its aviation services division to Pacific Air Cargo, a Los Angeles company with extensive operations in Hawaii and Samoa. The Aloha division provides customer service, baggage handling, ticket and ramp agents in Hawaii for Japan Airlines, United, and other clients. The deal would require the approval of the bankruptcy court. Aloha said the deal would preserve many of the service division's 1,100 jobs. Proceeds from the sale would be used to pay Aloha's main lenders. The match is seen as a good one for Pacific Air Cargo. Pacific Air opened a 65,000-square-foot facility at Honolulu International Airport last year in support of its flights between Honolulu and Los Angeles and its inter-island routes. The company is also a ground services provider. There still could be a sale of Aloha's cargo division to report this week. Bidding was extended past the original deadline when the leading bidder had offered $18 million, less than the $20 million minimum demanded by GMAC Commercial Finance, Aloha's lead lender. GMAC has loaned the airline a total of $44 million. Aloha lost $120 million in the last year in its fare war with Go Airlines. Boeing and Airbus said on Tuesday they'll join forces to support the development of next-generation air traffic control to improve fuel efficiency and reduce emissions and congestion. The Associated Press reports Scott Carson, Boeing Commercial Aircraft President and CEO, stressed a need to be sure systems being developed in Europe and the U.S. are fully interoperable. The news comes after last week's announcement by Airbus that it had successfully tested an ADS-B-based air traffic technology which could allow airliners on oceanic routes more flexibility to climb when necessary to optimize fuel burn. Carson was also quick to clarify for reporters in Geneva that this cooperation will not come at the expense of competition between the manufacturers. Quote, "You can rest assured that we will continue to compete aggressively," unquote. Airbus Chief Executive Tom Enders added, quote, "We need to cooperate where possible for the good of the environment," unquote. The development also does not spell the end of the fight over alleged subsidies of both manufacturers by their host governments underway before the World Trade Organization. Enders told reporters that Airbus will not seek a permanent settlement with Boeing until after the WTO delivers its final ruling later this year. Still ahead, Northrop Grumman educates critics on why its aerial tanker is better. Pratt & Whitney's geared turbofan will be tested on an A340. And Virginia's free leather aviator jackets are back. You're listening to Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits. That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, April 23rd, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. The protest Boeing filed with the Government Accountability Office of the U.S. Congress over the Air Force's aerial tanker contract award to Northrop Grumman and Eads will result in a decision by June 19th. Both sides are expected to wage a public relations battle as those days tick by. On Tuesday, Northrop Grumman released the first of what it says will be a regular press release series called Why We Won to, quote, provide detailed examples of why Northrop Grumman was selected, drawing on facts listed in a redacted version of a protected Air Force selection document, unquote. The first release, entitled Mission Capability, says the Air Force decided the larger KC-45A, derived from the Airbus A330 airliner, provided several advantages over Boeing's smaller 767-based design. Among them, quote, better fuel offloads at all distances from bases, better air refueling efficiency, better offload rate and receive rate, and a greater boom envelope versus Boeing, unquote. Sue Payton, the Air Force's chief acquisition officer, wrote that the KC-45A's, quote, refueling capability was compelling to my decision. Northrop Grumman's offer was a superior solution to the air refueling requirement, which is a key performance parameter, unquote. PR campaigns from both sides aren't really aimed at the general public, but rather at lawmakers representing areas where Boeing conducts manufacturing, who've threatened to cancel funding for the program after Boeing's design lost the competition. Airbus and Pratt & Whitney have announced they'll partner on flight testing the geared turbofan engine using an Airbus-owned A340. That engine is expected to produce double-digit percentage improvements in fuel burn, emissions, noise, and operating costs. The choice of the A340 for testing is intriguing, since the engine's really aimed at smaller aircraft, like Bombardier's upcoming C-Series airliner. The tests on the 340 will follow testing on Pratt & Whitney's own Boeing 747, which is also a much larger plane than the engine's intended market. The geared turbofan demonstrator engine recently began Phase 2 ground testing at Pratt & Whitney's Advanced Test Facility in West Palm Beach, Florida. Phase 2 will focus on engine performance and acoustic characteristics with a flight-capable nacelle system prior to mid-year flight testing. The geared turbofan demonstrator engine has logged about 150 hours since ground testing began in November of last year. In a geared turbofan, a gear system allows the engine's fan to operate at a speed different from that of the low-pressure compressor and turbine, resulting in greater fuel efficiency and a slower fan speed for reduced noise. On Monday, the FAA named Air Force Reserve Brigadier General Robert O. Tarter as Vice President of Safety Services for the Air Traffic Organization. Acting Administrator Robert Sturgill praised Tarter's distinguished military career and experience as an airline pilot. Quote, "He assumes oversight for our air traffic safety operations at a critical time for the industry. We're glad to have him on board," unquote. The Safety Services Unit is responsible for auditing safety and quality control in the air traffic organization and facilitating safety performance and improvement. A current focus is reducing runway hazards. ATO uses data, investigations, and independent testing to identify risks. Tarter, who will assume his duties with the FAA on April 27th, is currently serving as the mobilization assistant to the commander of the 1st Air Force Air Combat Command at Tyndall Air Force Base in Florida. He entered the Air Force in 1976 and has 3,600 hours flown in the military and another 6,000 hours as a civilian, including flying airliners for Delta. Tarter earned an undergraduate degree from Baylor and a master's in aeronautical science from Embry-Riddle. And finally, one of the coolest programs ever run by any state to promote general aviation and tourism has found the funding to resume operation. Virginia's Aviation Ambassadors Program was started in 2005 to encourage pilots and the general public to visit the Commonwealth's 66 public-use airports, attend pilot safety seminars, and visit aviation-related museums. At each location or event, participants get a stamp and an aviation passport, which can then be redeemed for prizes. The top prize is a leather aviator jacket. Unfortunately, the program was so successful it outstripped its budget. The $10,000 grant, which has allowed it to resume, came from the Virginia Aeronautical History Society and partners Heart of Virginia Aviation and Technam Aircraft. We thank them for stepping up. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, you'll hear my conversation with Dan Greider, who brought his DC-3 to Lakeland. We'll talk about the plane's history and what it can do. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.